5v1 Podchat Live episode 127 with myself, Ian, and Craig, as always, recording this on the 21st of May 2024. Craig, how's your week been and how are you?
I'm really good today, feeling very on top of everything. The running's still ticking over. London's a year away.
That was a very perky. I'm really good today. Yeah, that was a genuine one. I believed that. That's good. That's a great answer. I don't know about you. I had a bit of FOMO over the last week because it was the SEPA, the Sports and Exercise Podiatry Australia conference in Noosa, in Queensland. And I love that organisation. The people, you know, when you look at the people that on the board, like Cade and Luke and Narelle and TDC, they're some of my favorite people in podiatry. And I had real FOMO. It just looked like a great conference. I had Atoll was over there speaking. I sent him a text and asked him how it was going, and he said it was great and the audience were great. And I was seeing the photos of the ASICS morning run on the near the beach. And yeah, I don't know why I did it to myself. I was incredibly jealous.
Yeah, I would have loved to have gone too, but I just had so much on.
I also saw a photo of, I think it was, there was a few social media posts. There's one of Luke Kelly and John Osborne, both great guys. And they were wearing, I can only assume slash hope that it was some kind, that the dress code was some kind of like wear a bad or crazy shirt night. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn because otherwise they both need to revise their dress sense. But yeah, I think they had some kind of Hawaiian shirt night or something. It just looked awesome, and I wished I was there. I keep trying to tell to my wife that we should move to Australia, but she's still not having any of it. So the debate continues. We have received a couple of messages since last week, so I'll quickly go through them because I'm always keen to give people who message us a bit of a shout out because hopefully it will encourage people to message us more. James McCormack, who is a physiotherapist, he is of Flawless Physio Fulham. He's quite prolific on social media with his foot and ankle posts. Despite being a physio, he's really into the foot, which is great. He sent us an email saying, "Really enjoy the pod. It has become part of my weekly commute from Geneva to London," which is awesome to hear. I think it was just a flex that he lives in Geneva, which is also another thing that's worthy of being jealous of. But thanks, James. Appreciate your message. Love hearing when people are listening to us on the commute. Makes me feel good. We had another email from Laura Daunt, who is in Harrogate. I think she's a podiatrist, although she didn't say. And this was after last week's episode where we talked about swearing. And she said, another effing great episode. If Craig comes to London, how about a Podchat Live? I'd travel to that. That's given us some food for thought, Craig, because I know we talked about jumping in a podcast studio if you came to London, but what about a live one? How might that work?
Well, yeah, well, give that some thought. Yeah, if people are interested.
I don't know how that would work. I'm not. Yeah, we'd need to. Well, we'd need to test whether there was an appetite for it or not, I guess, and then work out how that would. But yeah, stuff to think about. And then lastly, I had a message from Nick Washmouth, who is the lead author on that swearing paper that we made reference to last week. And he messaged me on social media saying, "Appreciate your kind words and thanks for sharing the paper." And he also signposted Richard Stevens from Kiel, who started the idea of strategic swearing in 2009 and suggested that his work is a great resource on the topic for anyone interested. So I thought I'd give that a shout out as well. So thank you, Nick. We love your work and thanks for the message as well. Before we crack on with the papers, as has become customary, it's shoe fact time, Craig.
Well, this one was the Reebok company, who are now officially known as Reebok International Limited. But what I didn't know, well, I probably did know, but didn't quite register, is that up until 1986, the UK flag was part of their logo. But they were established in 1958 as JW Foster and Sons in Bolton, Lancashire. Then in 2005, they were bought out by the German company Adidas, who in 2001 sold them to Authentic Brands, and they're now based in the USA, which is probably why the UK flag's no longer part of their logo.
Yes, I did know that actually, because anyone of a certain age in the UK will know this as well. We had a shoe when I was a kid growing up, and then it became a bit retro thereafter, called the Reebok Classic. And it was the kind of shoe that you wore if you're a bit of a geezer, let's say. I don't know if hopefully you know what I mean by that, Craig. But yeah, the Reebok Classic. Have a little look for it online, and you'll see. I can remember the flag being next to the logo for that as well. So, Reebok's done a fair bit of traveling as a company, then, hasn't it? England to Germany to America. Great. Love your facts, Craig, as always. And I know other people do as well. So, we look forward to another one next week. Excuse me. Let's press on with the articles three to get through today. The first one was published in the latest edition of the Journal of Pain, and this is from a group of researchers largely from the UK. And it is called cannabidiol, so that's CBD, which I will refer to from now on, CBD products for pain, ineffective, expensive, and with potential harms. I think that headline pretty much catches the attention, particularly, I think. Given that CBD is very widely talked about, particularly on social media with influencers, saying what a great kind of pain reliever it is. These researchers basically scoured the literature for information which related to the analysis of CBD products, things like their purity, presence of contaminants, any harm reported when using them, etc. I will run through some of the kind of, I guess, the key take homes, which I think are the most important things that people probably want to hear. Point one, CBD products have varying amounts of CBD from absolutely none all the way through to much more than advertised. Point number two, CBD products may contain other chemicals other than CBD, some of which might be harmful. Point number three, of the 16 randomized controlled trials, 15 were negative, showing no greater pain relieving effect than a placebo. And the last point is that meta-analyses have linked CBD to increased rates of serious adverse effects or events and hepatotoxicity. So you're bad for your liver. So the perspective here is that there's no good reason for thinking that CBD relieves pain. And there's very good reason for doubting the contents of CBD products in terms of their content and purity. This is kind of at odds with what all the influencers on social media are telling us, Craig, with regard to CBD products.
Yeah, we could do a long episode on this topic. A couple of years ago, I wrote a blog post on this, so that predated this meta-analysis. And what I wrote about was I hadn't been paying a lot of attention to the evidence on CBD and related products as a therapeutic agent. But and obviously, in the news media, the pressure on politicians to change legislation to legalize it's been legalized in a lot of other countries. I just assumed that there would be a lot of good evidence to back it up. So when I did a bit of a deep dive into the evidence, I was quite shocked how little evidence there was supporting its use. And this most recent analysis just confirms that. Yet I don't for 1 minute deny the anecdotes. I've certainly talked to patients who are on a whole battery of drugs for different things, and they're taking CBD, and they've now got off a lot of drugs. I have no doubt that it is effective in a number of people for nausea, for especially on chemotherapy. It can help the nausea, but even the evidence for that is not that strong. So it's really supported by a lot of anecdotes. And I remember writing about that at the time in the context of plantar fasciitis, because patients were starting to comment, should I try this for my chronic pain from plantar fasciitis? And I just assumed there was good evidence because of all the noise that got made. The most, say, interesting paper I read on this was about a year ago, and it investigated the placebo effect of CBD and related products and looked at the placebo group in quite a few controlled trials. And most of the placebo groups get better. Like the reason these meta-analyses are finding it largely ineffective is, well, yes, the CBD does seem to work, but the placebo group improves by just as much. And the conclusion of that study was that if you believe you're taking it, it's probably going to work. So, and in one particular, it was quite a small study, but it was claimed to be an RCT, but both groups were given the placebo. But they were told you could be in the placebo group or you could be in the CBD group. but both groups were deliberately given the placebo. Both groups improved. So it was all about, if you believed you were taking it, it's probably going to work. And that, whether that accounts for a lot of the anecdotes we're hearing or not, I don't know. I mean, I doubt this is going to stop the political movement towards legalizing it and making it more widely available. Yeah, I don't know, but I do follow it with interest, which is why I sent you this one to say, well, you know, this is something we could talk about, because I do have quite strong views on it. I'm going to keep an open mind. I'm happy to support it, but the evidence is just saying it's no better than a placebo.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it? I remember several weeks ago, several episodes ago, we did a similar one about immersion in ice baths as well. Another thing that we see along with CBD, on, you know, with the influence, it's almost like all the people saying stuff on TikTok and Instagram aren't necessarily telling the truth, isn't it? And I think that's ridiculous. You know, I'm being sort of semi-sarcastic there, but we should probably remind ourselves that that's the case when we are scrolling through social media.
That a placebo is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, if people believe the bath is helping them improve, if CBD, if people believe it's helping their pain, well, yeah, it's going to help their pain.
I suspect the people that favor ice baths also favor CBD as well, because you might be that type of person. So, okay, great.
Well, I think the CBD is, there's a lot of money involved.
Always follow the money.
But also potential tax revenue for the state. There's more to it than just the evidence.
there always is, isn't there? 4 days ago, on the 17th of May, a paper was published from a group of researchers from Australia, from Bris Vegas, in the Developmental Medicine and Child Neurology Journal. I've got to give a hat tip to JW, James Welsh, for this. He emailed this to me just earlier today, actually, as he knew it would be something we'd probably want to talk about, and he was not wrong. It is called Child-Led Goal Setting and Evaluation Tools for Children with a Disability, a Scoping Review. The aim of this study was essentially to examine child-led goal setting and evaluation tools and approaches for children with disability or developmental delay. They found 50 articles in a search that met their criteria, and their criteria were that within these articles, they had to involve children less than 18 years old who had disability or developmental delay. And a child-led goal-setting tool or approach that had been used, and some kind of developmental therapy or rehabilitation. And they did a load of qualitative analysis and essentially revealed six distinct goal phases in which tools and approaches were used. And they synthesized this into a new framework for child-led goal setting, which they titled DECIDE, which is a mnemonic, which I'll explain in a second. Essentially, children actively participated in goal setting and evaluation across six different sort of decide phases. So that's DECIDE, obviously, and I'll just quickly explain what they stand for. D, direct children towards goal setting. So, you know, point, signpost them towards them. E, elicit goal topics and priorities. C, construct a goal statement. I, indicate baseline goal performance. D, develop an action plan to address the goal. And E, evaluate goal progress after the intervention. So a lovely kind of framework there for goal setting in children. Now, the reason I love this is that I, as I know you are, Craig, and as many of us are and probably should be, are very much about patient-centered care, very much about shared decision-making, very much trying to move away from the what should be considered old-fashioned and paternalistic approach to healthcare. But I think it's fair to say that we all very much think about kind of shared decision making with our adult patients, but perhaps maybe not with our pediatric patients. I could be speaking out of turn there because I don't see many pediatric patients myself, but it's lovely to see that there's still that approach applicable to children with disability. That was my kind of immediate thought when I skimmed this article earlier today.
Oh yeah, thanks to James for sending it, because I quite enjoyed it. And it just formalizes. I mean, it's not too different to the process we go through with adults and thinking differently. The paper is open access, and there will be a link to it in the show notes. But probably the strength of this was not the actual study, which I have no issues with. But if you scroll down to the discussion, there's quite a lengthy discussion all about goal setting. Okay, specifically in the context of children, but take the word children out and just think about goal setting in clinical practice. So it's actually a really good read, the discussion about goal setting in general. So it's well worth talking about other international classifications, synthesis of tools and approaches. Yeah, so it's almost out of place in a research paper, but that's good.
Yeah, and I would second that. Give that a read. The days of telling our patients to do things and then hoping they do them or moaning when they come back and they haven't done them, they should be behind us. It should very much be shared decision making, goal setting. So yeah, I agree. It's a great read. Thank you, JW. Right, last paper. This was published 3 days ago on the 18th of May. In BMC musculoskeletal disorders from a group of researchers from Sweden. And it's called Foot and Lower Leg Pain in Children and Adults with Cerebral Palsy, a population-based register study on 5,122 individuals. So, as we know, pain is very common in individuals with cerebral palsy. As some people may not know, the most reported pain site is actually the foot and lower leg. So, this was a cross-sectional study where they included all participants who were 4 years of age or older, based on the data that had been reported to something called the Swedish Cerebral Palsy Follow-up Program, or CPUP. They analysed the prevalence of pain in the foot and the leg. And its associations with age, sex, motor function, other clinical findings, etc. As the title suggests, there were 5,122 participants, and maybe worth noting that 66% were under 18 years of old, years of age, sorry. Won't bore you with the stats, but they ended up with some odds ratios, which tell us kind of where pain may be higher. And what they found was that pain is likely to be higher in females. It is likely to be higher in individuals who are able to ambulate compared to those who are not. And it is likely to be higher in individuals with a decreased range of ankle joint motion. Worth noting that all of these are, because this is cross-sectional, all of these are correlations, they're not causations. And the final thing they noted was that pain intensity and frequency will increase with age as well. So interestingly, I think for people that may well be seeing a lot of patients with from this group who have cerebral palsy, really fascinating to note the finding there, Craig, of decreased ankle joint range being a risk for higher pain. I mean, it almost seems like in a world where we're never too sure what strongly predicts pain or what strongly predicts injury, and we're not, of course, but time and time again, a limited range of motion in the sagittal plane at the ankle seems to just come out as something worthy of note, doesn't it?
Oh, I can recall, and I apologize, I can't remember who the speaker was, but they had a slide that listed about 150 cross-sectional studies linking tight calf muscles to a whole range of foot problems. Like, hundreds of studies, cross-sectional, not objective, so that's not exactly strong evidence. But I think the key take home from me from this paper was just how common foot pain was in that population. Not sure, we see that many in that group with foot pain, but it's, I presume that would be the next study is, what can be done about it? For what is quite a common problem.
And there was an article, wasn't there, that we spoke about, maybe it was last week or the week before. I think it was in the context of rheumatoid arthritis, where they were talking about sort of how the awareness of what role a podiatrist could play. And I wonder whether there's almost an applicability here to CP, cerebral
Terrible.
palsy, as well.
Exactly. Yeah, that was what struck me. Yeah. So I wonder what's done for them now, if yes.
Excellent. Right, let's start to wrap up then. So I will say thank you again to everyone who sends in messages. We love reading them. We will give people shout outs as much as we can. Please do keep them coming in. Our email is getinvolved@podchatlive.com. Our social media handles are podchatlive, mostly on Instagram or on Twitter/X, or Email is probably the best one because we've got it set up that it comes into both of our personal inboxes. So we can sometimes miss messages on social media, but we'll never miss an email. So email is the favorite one. With regards to next week, I'm actually away in Paris with my family because it's half term. So I don't think I'm going to be able to record an episode next Tuesday. But I was thinking, Craig, this is the first time I'm throwing this upon you, that if I don't leave till Sunday, if between now, it's Tuesday night for me now, if between now and Saturday, there's at least two papers that we think are interesting enough, why don't we record a slightly earlier one on Saturday night or something, or Sunday morning or something?
Well, we can always lie and just record it, then release it on Wednesday. People can pretend that they're,
Well, we could have done if I'd not said that out loud, actually. We could have, yeah. But anyway, we will try and get an episode out next week, despite the fact I'm away and I'm not allowed to take my laptop or my iPad away on family holidays, quite rightly, of course. But we'll get something out, maybe either a couple of days early, or we'll record something and we'll release it. Yeah, so there will be an episode next week, but might not just be as hot off the press and up to date as we always are. But I'm sure you can forgive us that. Anything else you want to say before we go, Craig?
Actually, just while you were talking, I'm just logging into our Spotify dashboard to get ready to edit and upload this episode. And I just noticed we on average, since the beginning, have had 423 views per episode, but the last 7 days, that's crept up to 469. So we've been
Yeah.
above average. So we're creeping up, which is good to know.
We promised ourselves we wouldn't get involved with or too bothered with the numbers, but as with all these things, you do start to kind of start to care a little bit, don't you? But I think we are up to, on that note, still on 30 ratings on Apple, but up to 70. I think it was 73 or 73 or 74 on Spotify. So that's slowly creeping up. Still a very, very small percentage of the amount of people that are listening to us, though. So I'd love that to get to 100. And then once it's at 100, I promise I will stop begging. You will not hear another thing about me saying about ratings once we get to 100. That's my word to you. Okay, great, Craig. A pleasure as always. And we'll catch up maybe in a couple of days' time.
Sure, otherwise I'll enjoy Paris.
Thanks, mate.